It's time for Sweet Home Cannabama, a show that'll answer all your questions, provide accurate information, and dispel the myths of cannabis, and have your specific questions answered by emailing jennifer@cannabama.com or text or call 343-0106. And now, for all things cannabis in Alabama, here's your host, Jennifer Boozer.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Jennifer Boozer, right here on Sweet Home Cannabama every Monday night at 7 o'clock. Right here on FM Talk 106.5. We're also live streaming from Facebook, Instagram, and X if you would like to join us and see us in studio. We're so great to look at. But we are broadcasting live, and then the replay will be available later. So enjoy that. We've got a great show prepared for you tonight. The show is sponsored by Cannabama First. That is my shop in downtown Mobile. We're located at 558 St. Francis Street in downtown. Our phone number is 251-255-5155. Our website is cannabama.com. And of course, we're on the socials under Sweet Home Cannabama on all of the pages. So join us there and follow us because we are going to be doing some really, really cool stuff. One of those things is MJ BizCon is the world's largest cannabis convention, and it is in Las Vegas starting on December 3rd. We are going as members of the press in order to do interviews with all of these great people that are in cannabis. We're going to go and see what the latest products are, what people are doing in research and farming and politics, law, legislation, business, all of those things. And of course, media. We are part of a vast network of media that will be there. So we're going to be bringing you the show. We've got some great sponsors for that trip. We want to say thank you to all of our MJ BizCon broadcast sponsors. That is Casper's Oil, the number one pet oil in Texas and the only pet oil we carry at Cannabama. Boro Hemp and Elevated Table from right here in Alabama. They've got that pantry product line, and we are loving it. NTRL, who we both sell their products, and they make our Cannabama gummies. So they're a big supporter. We've got Higher Education in Virginia, Royal Hemp, Honeycomb Hydro, and Seed the Change. And thank you so much to all of these businesses and organizations for supporting us on this adventure, because I'm very excited. I feel like I'm going to get to be officially part of the Cool Kids Club now. And, you know, it's been a long time coming, so I'm really excited. So thank you to our sponsors for that. Be looking for their info and their logos, all of the live streams and all the interviews that we are doing, including the live stream of me on a speaking panel with the other Courage and Cannabis authors at Planet 13 on Thursday, December the 5th at 5 o'clock, which will be 7 o'clock here. So be looking for that. Follow us online. You'll get to see all of that stuff. And hopefully we'll get to bring back some stuff. I don't know if any of it's going to be legal to take back to Alabama, though. So I'm going to make sure that I bring what I need from Cannabama, because it's legal to fly with. So I also want to say thank you to Marty Shelper and the Alabama Cannabis Coalition for introducing us to tonight's guest. You know, it's our final night of November for Veterans Month shows, and we have a special guest here to sort of expound on other types of psychedelics besides cannabis that are used for PTSD in veterans. David Karn is a policy attorney for alcohol and psychedelics in Alabama. He was the founding attorney for the Alabama Brewers Guild and the former in-house counsel and creative director at Back 40 Beer Company. He is now a founding member of the Psychedelic Bar Association. I didn't even know that was a thing. And he serves on the Litigation and Advocacy Committee. He is also a peer-reviewed published researcher in his field. And his policy work focuses on our evolutionary and cultural history with psychoactive substances. Welcome to the show, David Karn.
Hey, Jennifer, thank you for having me.
This has been something that I've wanted to talk about. You know, I am always talking about cannabis, but there are so many other psychedelics that are available. You know, it's almost like 5-6 years ago when cannabis was the taboo topic and hemp products were coming online, and all of the, is this legal? What does it do? Is it going to kill me? Is it going to help me? You know, why wouldn't my doctor tell me? We're kind of going through that right now a little bit with other psychedelics as far as research and the utilization of things like that. So this is going to be exciting. I am here to learn. Just a disclaimer, along with my listeners, I am not in any way well-versed in this topic, which is why we asked David to come, because he is. So I want to just right now get into, tell us how did you get into psychedelics?
Sure. Well, I started as a brewery and distillery attorney back in 2008, really at the start of the craft beer boom,
right
here in Alabama. And at some point, I started learning about our deeper history with alcohol in particular. And then I just kept going and learned that our alcoholic beverages in our past, often weren't just alcohol. They had other powerful natural substances in there, including several hallucinogens. And
right.
then I started learning about hallucinogens and psychedelics in general. And then sort of marrying the two, there is a well-known, somewhat forgotten, but it's getting better known now, period, in the 1950s and early 1960s, where LSD was found to be useful by psychiatrists.
Right.
Before it became notorious and made illegal by the end of the 60s.
Right.
And they found it to be most useful for alcohol addiction. And if you really want to geek out, there's another category of hallucinogens and some even more notorious drugs that were used before that mm-hmm. in the late 1800s and early 1900s. But that might be going a little too into the weeds.
Right. We don't want to chase too many rabbits because yeah. we want to do some yeah. learning tonight. Well,
yeah.
just before we get into these weeds. Pardon that pun.
Sure. Yeah. I was going to say fungi before we get going
right.
deep into the fungi, but anyway, continue.
Yes, before we get into the fungi, define psychedelics for us. Just let's be clear in the front end. What exactly are we talking about?
Sure. Well, the term often gets used broadly. You mentioned cannabis is often sometimes included in there. Depending on who you're talking to,
right.
and some other hallucinogens or delirients. There are different types of substances that sort of play in the same world. But the classic psychedelics are psilocybin, which is in magic mushrooms, mescaline, which is in peyote,
right.
LSD, which is a semi-synthetic made from a fungus, an ergot, which
okay.
infects grains, and DMT, which is the psychedelic ingredient in ayahuasca. And also, interestingly, the only known psychedelic that is also made in the human body, which has interesting implications,
mm-hmm.
also generally considered to be the most powerful of the psychedelics.
Wow. So just kind of like we have endocannabinoids, meaning cannabinoids created within the
mm-hmm.
body, there are psychedelic substances that were created by the human body? I mean, I can imagine it would, if you could get a peek in on my imagination, you know,
yeah.
I'm a visionary. I'm very visual.
Sure.
So I can think of an idea and see it 5-10 years down the road. Not so great on the details, but I would imagine just like the runner's high is compared to Delta 9 tetrahydrocannabinol, I would imagine that some of those things just kind of make sense that we would. Especially if they're compatible as medicine in the human body, that we would have some sort of endo supply.
Sure, and so I should say that there's one receptor in particular in the brain that is most associated with the psychedelic experience, and it is a particular subreceptor for serotonin.
Ah.
And the classic psychedelics appear to resemble serotonin enough to fit into serotonin receptors. Other endogenous chemicals in the body can fit into the same receptor as well.
Right.
But this particular subreceptor, it's the 2A subreceptor. The reason they most suspect that this is responsible for the psychedelic system is because all these scientists have come up with individual tiny molecules that'll attach specifically to and block individual subreceptors. And blocking that one tends to stop the psychedelic experiences.
Right.
But
I mean, that's why they're using it for PTSD and depression specifically, right? Because it does affect serotonin levels, correct?
Well, so the best way that I've found to explain how psychedelics work is, and this is based on published science out there,
of course,
but is that it hijacks, they hijack an evolutionarily important stress response system in humans and other animals. And it's mediated by the serotonin 2A receptor. And the best way to explain it is that our brains are really complicated. And they to save energy and, frankly, time, they learn over time to start making predictions based on our experiences, just to literally save us the brain power of thinking about things over and over again. So you can think of it like a social media algorithm.
Right.
And that your brain will start presenting the same things in front of you, the same things you do. It'll just say, oh, you're going to do that, well, and you're going to keep doing it again later. We'll just make that assumption.
Let me interrupt you right there. Yeah. We've got to go to commercial break. We're going to pick up right there, right back, just a minute, with David Karn.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody. Tonight we're talking to David Karn about the use of psychedelics for PTSD, especially with veterans. David, right before the break, we were talking a little bit about how these psychedelics are going to work in the brain. Was there anything that you didn't get to say before we move on? Go ahead.
Yeah, so I was using a social media algorithm analogy. So basically, the things you do in your life, your brain will start predicting you're going to keep doing them.
Right.
And psychedelics effectively will stop that algorithm for a while. And in the right setting and with the right integration afterwards, they can literally rewire the neural, you know, connections in your brain, and hopefully that you create a new algorithm for you that's more pleasant. So if in the context of trauma, of PTSD, if you have a lot of traumatic experiences in the past, then that's your algorithm. And psychedelics can help. You got to have the right setting and integration afterwards, preferably. But that's the idea. Generally,
right.
They shake up the algorithm.
Right. So it's kind of like muscle memory. When you do something over and over and over again, and your body just kind of defaults to that. And this is sort of like a shock to the system. I know with PTSD and complex trauma syndrome, which I have been diagnosed with, it is a constant. It's almost like you flip the switch on fight or flight, and you're flooding your body constantly with cortisol. That causes all sorts of problems, and you've got to have some sort of a reset. It's almost like shocking you out of that pattern and starting a new pattern. Is that sort of what you're saying?
Yeah, and I should mention as well, the one that gets the most attention for PTSD is MDMA or ecstasy or Molly, which is really a, sort of a cousin of psychedelics. It appears to be particularly helpful because it has an effect on essentially dampening the amygdala, which is plays a big role in that fear response, that fight or flight that you're talking about.
Right.
But again, more complicated than that. But that's one of the things that they found that MDMA appears to help in particular with.
Right. Well, I know just like with cannabis. I mean, I've been teaching every week for 5 years, 5.5 years, and we still have barely scratched the surface. So I know don't feel bad that you're only giving us surface information, because we're going to take in this level, and then later on we're going to get even deeper, because it is a lot, and it's a lot to take in. And it also, we're learning things just like with cannabis that go against everything we've ever been told. If we know anything about it, we've been told it's not a good thing, it's a bad thing, it's illegal, and so most of us are like, okay, well, that's not for me. And so we're having to rethink these ideals and these things. All the propaganda and things with cannabis is obvious, but, you know, with mushrooms too, and all of these things, these are controlled substances, correct?
Correct. And what we're learning now is that we have a really deep history with these substances. And
right.
We seem to have sort of had a period of where we forgot about them. And there's some good explanations for why that might have happened, which we don't need to get into here. But we're relearning them now with the advancements of modern science.
Of course. And just like with cannabis, it's not new. But it's new to it's new to us as something that can be a part of our daily lives, that can be medicine, that's the opposite of what we've kind of always thought it was or been told it was, you know. And you and I were talking earlier last week, you know, wondering about who was the first guy that tried, you know, a mushroom with psilocybin in it, thinking it was just going to be dinner and had a long trip, you know, like how you got to wonder how these things came to be.
Sure. Yeah, there's some really interesting arguments as well for sort of a mutualistic relationship between animals and these fungi.
Right.
Essentially causing the animals to think a little bit differently and maybe even go to, for example, a new place to range or find food and take the spores of the fungi with them.
Right.
And help the fungi reproduce and then, you know, maybe help the animal as well, especially if wherever they were didn't have much food and the new place does.
So well, I'm sure
fascinating stuff.
On the back end, pardon the pun, they're probably fertilizing as they go, you know, and because some of the best mushrooms are found in poop, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, that sounded so juvenile.
No. The most popular species of psilocybin mushrooms is a dung-dwelling species, but there are several. There are actually, I think, two or three that were identified, new species identified in Africa this year. Dung-dwelling species, but not all of them dwell in dung. But the most
it certainly sounds more professional to say it that way instead of aren't they grown in poop?
Similar to what I said earlier about the animals and ranging and everything, there's an arguments for our relationship as humans becoming meat eaters over the years and following cattle around and following their eventually experimenting with what was growing in their dung and it helping us out.
Right, because you wouldn't think that would be a natural inclination for a human based on my experience. You know, that's growing out of the thing we eat's poop. Let's eat it, see what happens. You know, like I'm sure that there's an explanation, but you do. I mean, that's like berries and everything else. Things that we eat now, you know, and I'm learning about all the foods we eat now that aren't actual real in nature, you know, that are modified and crossbred, and like broccoli's not a thing. I didn't know that. That's crazy.
It's part of a mustard. There's a bunch of vegetables that come from the same thing.
Right.
Mustard based.
But you ask anybody these days and broccoli, you know, is like one of those things that everybody needs to eat. But it's kind of weird, you know, but how did we discover these things? Because you can imagine that there weren't cavemen going around going, you know, I feel sad or extra stressed. Let me go get a mushroom, you know, like seriously, it's amazing what we know and can do now with these same things that people were just, you know, maybe I'll eat this and die. Who knows, you know, because there's those too.
Yeah.
Can you imagine the death rate of people trying out new food in the forest? You know, I already know I wouldn't have made it very long. Oh, I would have been in the back going, no, that looks too much like greens and beans. And no, I'm not eating that.
Sure.
There's no Lord's chicken in the forest, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's right.
Well, let's get into politics because you mentioned the post-election political divide in the psychedelics community. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, this is something I don't want to spend much time on. I just wanted to note it because we are so close on the heels of the election and then the, January 20th coming up in the new administration.
Right.
And I've just noticed in the psychedelics community a bit of a divide, and it's largely political.
Right.
I am optimistic, and I believe everybody will come together in the end, but I just wanted to note it. And if anybody out there is interested in this developing space, please just spread the word as respectfully as possible. Keep the politics to a minimum. And focus on responsibility, safety, and health when discussing these substances.
Right. And then let's keep in the forefront of our minds, in the forefront of our conversations, let's always keep the patients in mind first, especially our veterans, because this is largely used for mental health reasons. And we know especially our veteran community is suffering at an exponentially higher rate from things like PTSD and traumatic brain injury, addiction, homelessness, right, and suicide, beyond the physical injuries and the and just, you know, being away from reality for so long and coming back, you know, a very changed person. And you know, that's a hard thing. So those people should be at the forefront of your mind. If you're talking politics, remember the patients, because in my experience, especially here in Alabama, all anybody wants to talk about is power and money and who did what wrong, and no one is talking about the patients. So we want to always honor the patients, because that is why we do this. This is why we work this hard. That's why we do research. We teach. We get on here week after week and teach, because the patients need this. And just like with cannabis 5.5 years ago when we started teaching publicly, people need a basic understanding of this so that the you remove the fear and then they can move on to, is this for me? And yeah, and leave all that in the dust, you know.
Right. And just to wrap up the political conversation, this new administration has already signaled that they're interested in addressing psychedelics.
Yes.
Literally, it was the first thing mentioned in a long list of items, specifically by Robert F. Kennedy Jr.
I was going to say, you're talking about RFK Jr.'s tweet. Yeah.
And so anyway, obviously we have an opportunity here. I don't think anybody wants to go about this in an unsafe manner.
Right.
And let's just all be respectable and know we're on the same team.
Right. And a little segue on the political thing, because we have 1 minute to the break. I sent you this article that just came out this weekend that the Georgia Senate committee is recommending a $5 million investment to research psychedelic-assisted therapy for PTSD. And I thought it was interesting because there were several senators, but this one, he told his colleagues that he initially was reluctant, but that he was swayed by the experiences of veterans that told him their stories. And specifically a Vietnam vet, because he himself was a vet from Vietnam. And I thought that was beautiful that he was willing to listen to the patients again. That's why it's so important. Listen to those veterans and say, look, this isn't anything to be afraid of. It's a good thing. And that was enough for this elected official, who's got a lot hanging on what people think of his decisions, to go ahead and recommend that. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk more with David Karn about psychedelics. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now, with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sweet Home Cannabama. We're here every Monday night on FM Talk 106.5, live stream from Facebook, Instagram, and X. And you can find the audio podcast on any major streaming service. Wherever you listen to podcasts, just look for Sweet Home Cannabama. One thing I wanted to say at the beginning, and I forgot, because I was so excited to get into this with David, but it is Thanksgiving this week, y'all, and we're having one of our biggest sales days of the year. I don't know why. It's probably families and, you know, Thanksgiving, sitting around with your family, but Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, is one of our biggest sales days of the whole year. So we have a sale. All of our sponsor products, that is NTRL, Casper's Oil, Elevated Table, all 25% off. And then we have some other products that are 25% off, some 50% off, some buy two, get one, all that on Wednesday. So come check us out. We will be closed on Thursday, obviously. That's one of like 3 days of the year we're closed. So come and get whatever you need to survive that whole weekend. And you know you need it on Black Friday, so don't forget about me. Anyway, so welcome back, David. We were talking about politics and psychedelics. Let me ask you this. Let's talk about the FDA. It's one of our favorite alphabet groups at this show. That was sarcastic. So what you said something happened with MDMA for PTSD with the FDA. So tell us about that.
Yeah, so MDMA-assisted therapy for PTSD specifically, treatment-resistant PTSD especially, was up for FDA approval for a new drug application, and the FDA denied it. There was an independent advisory committee in June that had recommended disapproval, which was, all of this was unexpected to the psychedelics community. Things had been looking good, but a few of the things that they mentioned, one of the more obvious ones is how difficult it is to do a so-called blinded, double-blind, placebo-controlled study when you have a powerful, compound, and you can't have a placebo that, you know, tricks you into thinking you might have gotten that compound. It's really hard to take a placebo.
Right.
Yeah, placebo and think you're on a massive dose of MDMA.
A placebo, would be a huge, I mean, they would know right away.
But ultimately, the long and short of it is that this is not a nail in the coffin. The FDA just asked for more studies to be done on safety and efficacy. And this is probably going to push things back a year or two, but the FDA is still working with the organization behind this. The story's not over.
Right.
This is just, you know, a bit of a hiccup, but it's ongoing.
So let me ask you this. Where are these things legal? Are there places where ketamine is legal, but psilocybin isn't? Kind of confusing. Isn't psilocybin legal in Oregon, maybe Colorado? I don't know. Tell us.
So psilocybin is still federally a controlled substance on Schedule 1 of the Controlled Substances Act.
Okay.
Some states so far, too, Oregon and Colorado, have moved at the state level to reschedule and to create what is generally being referred to as a supported adult use program that both of them have, which, and then Colorado adds a limited personal use allowance for psilocybin specifically, which is the magic mushroom compound.
Right. Right.
And supported adult use basically just means it's kind of like a psychedelic-assisted therapy, except the therapist does not have to be a therapist. They just have to be a licensed facilitator that qualifies under the program. It doesn't require you don't have to be a medical doctor. You don't even have to be a board-certified non-medical therapist or
Right, like marriage and family therapy and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but you have to take it in Oregon, you have to take it in a facility with a licensed facilitator. Colorado, you have that option, and there's a personal use allowance there.
Okay, so it's you said adult use program. That sounds like, from where we come from, that sounds like recreational, and are they not considering it medical, whatever?
No. Technically, it's not medical, and there's issues with Colorado. It went a little further in making sure that medical licensure boards would be okay, and people, like, if a doctor was to go and do this, even if it's legal, they're worried about consequences from their licensure board. Colorado went a little further to make sure that was taken care of. I should mention Massachusetts tried to do about, these are all ballot measures, by the way. And there are also local efforts that are, a lot of people call decriminalization. Those are more accurately referred to as deprioritizing enforcement. So the cities and counties, they can't change state or certainly federal laws, but they can basically say, hey, to their law enforcement,
we're not going to arrest these people
for these things. Yeah. Now, there's the first one of those was in Denver in 2019 by an ordinance. I believe everything else since then, there's around 20 more since across the country that are by city council resolution stuff. But and we've had some, I've worked on some movement in Alabama, but to my knowledge, there's nothing that's happened at the municipal level in Alabama, or certainly the state level.
Shocker.
I should mention Massachusetts tried for a ballot measure this election, and they failed. I believe the numbers were 57% against and 43% in favor. So it was relatively close.
Now, when you say ballot measure, you mean the people of that state got to vote for it, correct?
Yeah, we don't have...
No, I was going to say, that's why I needed clarification, because there's no such thing as that in Alabama.
Yes. This is something we miss out on, so... I often find myself in calls with the people being like, yeah, I need you to explain this a little bit more to me because we don't deal with it here. But anyway, the Massachusetts basically tried to go Colorado then some. So they added it was supported adult use with a personal use allowance, but they added, in addition to psilocybin, they added mescaline, DMT, and ibogaine.
Really?
Ibogaine is probably, if I had to guess, if anybody's knowledgeable in these substances, that one has some health implications with cardiac events. So, but it also appears to be really effective specifically for treating addiction, and especially opioid addiction, because it for some reason it appears to minimize the withdrawal symptoms, which are the big thing in opioid.
I am 10 years clean from opioids, and one of the things that I learned while I was preparing to do that was ibogaine. But you had to go out of the country for that.
Yeah.
You had to go to Mexico for that. And I was like, I'm not really going to go to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. I should mention as well, on point for our topic today, veterans have also found, there are at least anecdotal accounts of veterans finding it to be useful. And often veteran issues and PTSD, addiction, depression, all these, they're not necessarily distinct. And, you know, and PTSD may be at the root of other things. So,
right. We know that addiction is rooted in trauma, period. It's not the alcohol or the drug that's so bad that makes someone do bad things. It's the numbing of trauma that we don't have coping skills for. You know, it's the self-medication, the numbing of those issues that cause us to lose control, and then the body becomes, you know, dependent on these things and treats you real bad when you try to stop.
Mm-hmm. I should mention one last thing on ibogaine It is notorious. It has very long-lasting, very difficult hallucinogenic experience. It's one of those things that when you hear people talk about, it's like, oh, that's something you don't want to do again. But
that was another thing for me. I was like, really? Don't think I want to put any more crazy in this goal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And, I'm serious. And I sell mushroom bars that are blends, and I'm scared to try them because I've done a lot of mental health work and therapy and stuff, but man, I've been through some stuff. I don't know that I'm ready to revisit it all.
Sure.
And all I hear about it is that, you know, you go to this place and I'm like, yeah, no, I'm gonna stay right here with my issues. It scares me.
Ibogaine is not a fungus. It comes from the root of a plant and the iboga plant in Africa. So of course, This is informational only. No legal or medical advice is being given here.
Please, let's put that disclaimer right here. We are not those professionals.
Yes,
absolutely. You said something earlier. You said treatment resistant. Why treatment resistant? Do they want you to try and fail at all the conventional pharmaceuticals and therapies first before you would be allowed to try this? Or what is that?
That's more or less the idea. But of course, once it gets approved, there could be, you know, quote unquote, off-label applications. But generally speaking, that is the what they were going for, basically, is you know. And I should mention as well, MDMA and also psilocybin there's a psilocybin-assisted therapy for treatment-resistant depression. Both of them were designated by the FDA as breakthrough therapies, which means that at the time in the clinical trials, or I should say really still, even notwithstanding the FDA disapproval of MDMA, they still considered it a breakthrough therapy, which means that it appears to show substantially more benefits for a major disorder or a major issue than anything that's available in the market. So, and that sort of ties in with the treatment resistant thing. It's like, if nothing else is working, maybe this thing will work that's substantially better than anything else that isn't working. You know?
So do they want you to also be on those therapies and use these substances? Like, I know, like an asthmatic that takes something twice a day, but sometimes they get into a crisis situation and have to use an inhaler at like a rescue thing for a breakthrough situation or like a panic attack, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you mean, or is it something else?
I think just conceptually the idea is, hey, these things are powerful drugs that can treat some of our most desperate conditions.
Right.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that when they're legal that they'll only be used for those conditions.
Right, right, okay.
Treatment-resistant conditions obviously don't have a treatment that's working. Let's
right.
see if this works.
Okay, when we come back from the break, we're going to learn a little bit more about psychedelics with David Karn. Stay with us.
Welcome back to Sweet Home Cannabama. Now with all the information you want about cannabis, here's your host, Jennifer Booser.
Welcome back, everybody. Tonight we're talking with David Karn, who is an expert on psychedelics for PTSD in veterans. David, what are some key differences between, say, why would you use ketamine and not psilocybin? Or why would you use MDMA instead of DMT or whatever else? What are the distinguishing factors that would make you decide to use one over the other, or make a practitioner suggest one or the other?
Well, again, I'm not a medical doctor,
but
from a legal standpoint, the short answer is that among those right now, particularly in Alabama, ketamine is the only one that's that is legal in any form. It's on Schedule 3 as an anesthetic. And they found that sub-anesthetic doses were helpful for treating a variety of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And there are really two different ways that ketamine is offered. One is a so-called ketamine clinic that's generally staffed with an anesthesiologist, and you're generally administered it intravenously under the observation of the doctors there. The other is so-called ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, or CAP, where a prescriber, a doctor, or a nurse practitioner makes a prescription with a recommendation that the patient take it in the presence of a psychotherapist to have additional counseling. The only thing I'll say there is there could be issues with licensure boards and things like that here as well. And just this drug has to be prescribed anyway, so check with your doctor.
Right.
Is the thing to do there. There are some issues with for CAP from the FDA specifically. For CAP, generally the prescription is in an oral lozenge form as opposed to IV. Because you know you're not going to be administering it in a clinic with an anesthesiologist,
then. Right?
And the FDA specifically hasn't approved specifically the oral lozenge. But again, ketamine itself is not on Schedule 1; it's on Schedule 3. You
okay.
got to get a doctor to prescribe it. So talk to your doctor.
Right. Okay. Wonder why a lozenge? Is it the slow release?
That's
my perplexed look is, I wonder why not a capsule or a tablet or...
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Why a lozenge those... that you would have to take a long time to, you know what I mean? Unless you're one of those people that chews on suckers, but still, I wonder why a lozenge is the only at-home administration.
I might not be. I'm not entirely sure. I just think the biggest issue is you don't want, to prescribe folks to go and self-administer IV treatments.
Well, that's obviously, we don't want that. Thanks a lot, man. Well, and obviously, you would want to consult your medical professional about any of this. But, I was just wondering, if some are considered better for certain reasons or others, And what about microdosing? I hear so much about microdosing in cannabis and in the mushroom world, and a lot of people are microdosing psilocybin in such a small amount that it doesn't make them see things and have auras and, hallucinate or have any visual effects, but it, a small, mm-hmm. tiny amount every day, every other day, seems to be really effective, and it does not impair you or take you out of yourself in any way.
Well, again, from a legal standpoint, psilocybin technically illegal,
right?
Federally and at the state level in Alabama. Really, right. The only way around that would be a religious use exemption. Again, if you want to be legal,
right?
And that's a longer conversation. We don't need to get into that, but
right.
And then another one to mention that is also legal, and this one really deserves some cleaning up of sort of some myths out there, is Amanita muscaria. Also Amanita pantherina, and then there's a possible third separate species, Amanita persicina, which actually is the only one that grows in Alabama. It is not scheduled. It's sort of a forgotten, is probably the most popular hallucinogen of antiquity,
right.
But it's sort of been forgotten and replaced by the new magic mushroom of psilocybin, which may even be the OG magic mushroom back when we were running around following cows.
Right.
But,
you're talking about the what we typically think of when we think of a visual representation of a mushroom with the red, cap,
yes,
that's polka dotted.
It's the Mario mushroom.
Yeah, the Mario mushroom. That's exactly right.
It's all over the place in fairy tales. And
makes
and
more sense that Mario Land looks like it does and has weird turtles that give you power.
Exactly.
You
so
know?
If you watch the new Mario movie, which I watched with my godkids, they talk about it, powering up. There's a very psychedelic,
subliminal psychedelic
movie. Yeah. But I'll mention this. So they're because they're not scheduled, they're perfectly legal for you to pick, harvest, even grow, try to grow them yourself if you can, figure out how to do that. They grow under trees.
Or purchase at Cannabama. I'm sorry, I didn't mean.
The only thing to be careful about there is just you want to make sure that the manufacturers are going about it the right way. There have been some issues with what appears to be some pretty outright fraud. There's probably some hucksters out there slinging what I like to call gas station mushrooms. And
we are very familiar with gas station weed around here.
Same
principle applies. It's all garbage.
Two more things on that. Even the commercial ones, it's still, if they're doing it the right way, they still have to prove safety. And I don't know, the jury's still out on that.
Right.
I think we're gonna see stuff happening with Amanita. But this is another mushroom that often people bring up safety things. It's evidently not the most the safest experience. Humans have come up with creative ways to figure out how to process them.
Right.
Some really creative ways. But again, this is one of those that you want to make sure that you learn. Just get into, and especially if you're picking them as well.
Right.
Find an experienced forager. Because not all Amanita mushrooms are good mushrooms. In fact, the deadliest mushroom in the world is an Amanita mushroom.
So, oh wow!
Unfortunately, I don't think it grows around here. But the death cap mushroom is an Amanita mushroom. So you want to have an experienced forager that's helping
right.
you out there. And then also with processing. But again, perfectly legal to use this yourself. It's just the commercial products are in sort of arguably a psychoactive gray area right now, similar to what we saw with cannabis early on, and that sort of normalized. I imagine something similar will happen with Amanita, and I think that the psychedelic train is running far enough down the tracks. We're going to figure all this out one way or another eventually.
Right. Okay, so if anybody listening wants to find more information, what's a good resource you would recommend?
The best is probably MAPS.org. They get a lot of credit for really being the front runner in this. They were the ones behind originally the MDMA FDA trials. It ended up getting handed off to a for-profit. They're a nonprofit. It ended up getting handed off to a for-profit related organization that's now named Lykos. But MAPS is sort of the OG folks there. They don't just deal with MDMA. It's the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, generally just psychedelic. They also deal with cannabis.
Okay, great.
News for a cannabis-specific real-world use clinical trial for PTSD for cannabis that MAPS is behind. And actually, they had a coup of sorts against the division of the FDA that denied their MDMA application because they were trying to hold up this cannabis trial. And MAPS filed for a formal motion for dispute resolution, which essentially was an appeal to that division's governing body, and MAPS prevailed this time. So that's one for the good guys here. No offense to FDA, but we're trying to do our best here. We gotta take our wins where we can get them.
Right. Well, thank you so much. We're running out of time for being on the show tonight, David. This is fascinating. I hope you'll join us again. I think I already asked you if you would be my go-to psychedelics guy, because I love to have people who are well-versed and who know how to teach. So thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jennifer.
All right, join us next Monday for another interesting show. We're going to have our friend Martin Smith, president of the Kentucky Hemp Farmers Association. And here at Cannabama, we have so much to be thankful for tonight. And I thank each of you for your support, your time, and your loyalty to Cannabama and this show. So from all of us, from our Canafam to yours, just wanted to say happy Thanksgiving from us here at Cannabama and Sweet Home Cannabama. And God bless you all. Have a good night and join us next Monday right here at 7 o'clock. As usual, FM Talk 106.5, live stream on Facebook, Instagram, and X. You can find us here every single week, all year round, for over 5.5 years. Thank you, guys. Have a great holiday week. Good night.